here. The visit is a wonderful place. It's the first time I've been to PI. I hear all about it from my colleague, Xiaogang Wen, who is about to join here. And now I have some big understanding why, maybe. Okay, so it's a nice place. I can see all the excellent people here. So today I'm going to talk about, I think, a rather fun topic. I made the title In Search of Marana. Of course, Marana's story is that he was a very brilliant young Italian physicist, and then somehow, at a very young age, at 32, he disappeared when he was en route from Palermo to Naples and has never been heard of. There's a very nice article by my colleague, Frank Wilczek, in Nature of Physics about this story and a lot of the background that goes with it. So I recommend it to you very highly. Marana was famous because he found a representation of the Dirac equation, which has real solutions. So the original Dirac equation was solved with a complex solution. And if you have a real solution, then the corresponding field theory would describe a fermion, which is its own antiparticle. And it's suspected that neutrinos are actually such an object, but at the moment it's still not proven. But I think many of my many people believe that that's the case. This is not what I'm going to be discussing today, because in this case we're talking about a neutrino being a momentum eigenstate. What we're interested in today should be more properly called a Marana bound state. And so these are states which are localized in space that we can, just sitting there. It should be an object just sitting there and not propagating. The question is that can we capture such an object, right? And which is its own antiparticle, so or this state. I shouldn't call it an object, I guess. And I would like to explain to you why we would like to do that and what's interesting about this state, if we can capture such a state. And in fact, it turns out it is quite promising that in solid-state physics, we actually will be able to capture such a state. So I'm coming from a solid-state physicist perspective, and we are searching for such a state. It's a little too late to search for Marana himself, but we can search for something that bears his name. That is our goal. So the outline is that I want to introduce to you what are Marana fermions and why are they interesting and maybe useful. And then the question is, main question is how can we create such an object using solids in solids? And then if you can have created such an object, turns out that it's not so easy to detect them. So how do you know that you have made such an object? It's quite possible that people have already made all these objects sitting around in the labs, but there's just no way of finding the signature. So detecting them is also a question. And in the end, actually, very recently, there has been a lot of press on an experiment out of the Netherlands, which claims to see some signature of such a device. And I'll make some comment on that at the end. OK, so just from the beginning, what are some of the formal properties of a Marana bound state? Okay, first and foremost, it is its own antiparticles, right? So it's a real operator. It satisfies commutation, anti-commutation, we can think of that Marana fermion as half a fermion in some loose sense, because a fermion should be a complex object. So we can always make a if you have two Marana fermions, I can always make a conventional fermion out of them by superposition. So this half is different from fractionalization half, which is really taking a physical particle and dividing it into two pieces. Right, so this half is in a more formal sense. Okay. Well, an important concept in this Marana fermion is that it's the notion of fermion number parity. So obviously, fermion number is not conserved, right? Because the same operator creates and destroys a fermion. But then there is something that's conserved, namely the even and odd number of particles, because the even and odd sectors will be separated by that. They're not connected by these Marana objects. I can either add one or remove one, right? So the total number of fermions remains either even or odd. Okay, so and that natural because if I invert these, if I can also write in Marano fermion in terms of these physical fermions, and it will be a superposition, equal superposition of a creation and destruction operator of a fermion. And then I can introduce a parity operator, one minus count the number of fermions, right? And so this is a number which can will be, even or not, it will be conserved. And it turns out that it's just this object. And furthermore, the only coupling, if you have two of these Marano fermions, the only interaction I can write down is this. It's the I epsilon gamma times gamma 2, it turns out, because you know I cannot build higher order operators out of Marano fermions. Okay? So they interact in a rather simple way. So these seems rather strange objects from our perspective, but it turns out to be actually very natural in the theory of superconductivity, right? Because superconductivity is a theory of pairs, of pair of electrons. So for me, what I had called electrons before, F dagger, is going to be electrons, right? The physical, there will be physical electrons there. And I want to start with physical electrons and create these Marano fermions, okay? Now, and as I said, superconductivity is basically it's very natural that I should go to the superconductor to look for such an object, and it's also basically the only place where I can look for such an object, right? Because in the superconductor, I have Bose condensation of pairs. That means that the number of pairs is not fixed in the superconductor. If I have a superconductor of a given phase, the number of Cooper pairs is not fixed. So therefore, particle number is not fixed. But parity is fixed, because I can add, if I want to have an odd number of electrons, I break a Cooper pair, and that costs me certain energy. And so the odd number of electron sector and the even number are different, right? An even number can be told in the ground state, but the odd ones will have a excited state, which we call quasi-particles, right? So these are described in BCS theory by this Bogoliubov equation, okay? The BCS theory just simply pair electrons with electrons and hole, right? BCS theory is a mixture of electrons and an absence of electron, and usually we pair electrons with opposite spin in the conventional superconductors because we want to form singlet. But let me, at least theoretically, let me just consider pairing electrons with the same spin. Right? Let me imagine I have a big magnetic field that aligns all the electron spin. That, of course, can be only be a triplet pairing and therefore has to be odd parity, P wave. Right? The superconductors in the world that we live in are S wave, spin singlet superconductors. But nevertheless, the structure is the same. The Hamiltonian mixes, C and C dagger, there's a diagonal term, which is the single particle Hamiltonian. And then the off-diagonal is a pairing, BCS pairing term. And it takes on this structure. Now, there's a strange thing about this representation of Bogoliubov-Dejean theory. As you know, when you solve this Bogoliubov-Dejean theory, the solutions always come out as plus or minus. You have to take a square root, plus or minus a square root. So you might think that I have two kinds of solutions, a positive energy solution and a negative energy solution. But it turns out to be fake. And that's because I have I've represented my phase space twice, right? I've represented the same state as an electron and a hole. So I've double counted. And therefore, all the solutions come out there's a built-in particle symmetry. And that is really due to redundancy in the representation. This is fake. The negative states are not. Now, obviously, if I'm looking for excited state, I should look for only a positive state solution. So these negative states are actually redundant. Yeah, they're not physical.
It's a physical choice to focus on the positive one?
Yeah, for example, I can just say, forget about negative one. Yeah.
But you're right. Somebody else could focus on the negative one.
Well, but I'm looking for excitation.
I understand. Yeah. It's not your game.
Right. So, no, but physically, I should look for the ground state, and these are excited states. So only the... In a sense, only the positive one makes physical sense. Right? But the negative one just come in for a ride as a solution of this equation. The reason I focus on that is that if you look at the Bogoliubov-Dejean equation formally, then you notice that the solution comes in pairs, and these states are, and even the eigenstates or the operators are not independent. They satisfy the following condition, that the positive electron ones simply the complex conjugate of the negative electron, any negative energy ones. Right? So this is in this sense that they're not independent. They're not independent solutions. Okay? So that's all fine and good, except if you ask yourself, suppose I have a situation where I have a single state at zero energy. Suppose I can arrange it so that I find a zero, so-called zero mode solution, right? Somehow, okay? As I said, usually these when you solve this equation, you're plus or minus state and everybody's happy. But if I have a zero mode, what happens? Well, this is very special, this zero mode. By this general condition, this zero mode exactly is its own antiparticle. Therefore, this zero mode, if I have one of them, would be a Majorana. Okay? And furthermore, usually we write the quasi-particles as, you know, superposition U and V is the amplitude of the particle and the whole part, electron and the whole part. In this case, the U's and V must be equal in amplitude and complex, conjugate to each other. So therefore, these guys, if I have a zero mode, a unique zero mode, if I have a single zero mode, this will be a Majorana particle. Okay. Now, furthermore, the minute I find a zero mode, I will be guaranteed I will never lose it again. Right? Why? Because this is protected, right? Because this guy can never shift away by any perturbation. Right? Because once it shifts away, I have to split. Right? Because once it's not zero, I have to have two states by this general symmetry. But I know that one state cannot become two states by any perturbation. Perturbation can only move these guys around and mix them, but I cannot create new states out of thin air, right? And therefore, this state is topologically protected. Okay, yeah?
If you start with some particular number of electrons, let's say even number,
yeah,
then where is the partner Majorana fermion solution?
Yeah. Okay, right. Now we're talking about formal things. If you solve it in a finite system, then one would say that you can never have a single Majorana, you always have two, right? But I can still spatially separate them so that one is sitting on one end and the other sitting on the other end. And that's actually the situation I would be interested in. I would be interested in making a wire that is very long and arranged so that the Majorana would sit on opposite end. Then they don't talk to each other much, right? Then I have a Majorana. If they start coming close to each other and talk to each other, they can interact via the term that I wrote before, then they will split, right? So you're right, in a real system, there really is always two of them. And in principle, they will split by some exponentially small amount, okay? But, morally, if they're far apart, I can call them Majoranas, and they will be zero mode. Okay. Right. Okay. So that's the setup. So this is why looking for Majorana bound state is actually a good game for solid state physicists because we're familiar with superconductors, and therefore, people have recognized this for a long time. And the prime candidate would be a p-wave superconductor, right? Because we need to have this a pairing of the equal spin. So we have a p-wave superconductor. And the one that has been discussed is the so-called px plus ipy. So this is one which is has a full gap. But those are technical details. So this pairing state breaks time reversal symmetry, and it has been shown going back to Jack Keefe and Rossi back in 81 and more recently Reed and Green that if you have a p-wave superconductor of this type and if you look inside a vortex core, if you make a superconducting vortex, look inside a vortex core, then you would find a Majorana fermion zero mode there. Right? Okay, so just accept this as a fact. In the previous slide, I just said that if you can make such a zero mode, it will be Majorana. So this is people have actually proposed a realization of this. Okay. And as we discussed before, if you have two of these vortices, and if you bring them together, then they will split. And the splitting is given by this interaction term. Okay. And this also makes sense because we know that a superconductor carries half vortex. And you cannot have a single a half vortex in the system. They come in pairs. So that all makes sense. Okay. Yeah. So why are these things interesting beyond the fact that they are their own antiparticles? Well, I think the most fascinating property of these guys is that they obey non-abelian statistics. Okay, so let me explain that to you, what I mean. So basically, we talked about one Marana and then two, right? Then of course we can extend it to two n number of Marana fermions, right? You have two n Marana fermions. Each two I can group together to form one physical, let's say, electron. Okay, so I can group into n ordinary fermions. Okay, and each fermion, the Hilbert space is that it can be even empty or occupied, right? So it has two state. So the phase space, the size of the Hilbert space, if I have two n Marana fermions, is 2^(n/2). Okay, a little peculiar. But furthermore, as we discussed, the even and odd number of fermion sectors don't talk to each other. So we can divide by a further factor of 2, and that's the number of degrees of freedom of a collection of Marana fermions. Okay? Now, so this is a strange way of describing a Hilbert space, right, with some kind of fractional power. And you can see that the choice of grouping is arbitrary. If I have two n Marana, I can call these guys electrons, these guys are electrons. I can pick them any way I like. Okay? And so different grouping would correspond to a unitary rotation of the Hilbert space, because different grouping, I do not change the Hilbert space. The Hilbert space is the same, but different grouping may form a different state. So therefore, from this point of view, it's perhaps not surprising that if I exchange two Marana fermion, which is a relabeling of these states, that corresponds actually to a rotation of the Hilbert space vector. Okay. And when that happens, we say that this is non-abelian statistics. In other words, the simple act of exchanging two of these objects actually produce a different Hilbert state vector in the Hilbert space. So in contrast, what we're familiar with in ordinary statistics is boson and fermion. When you exchange two particles, you change the sign of the wave function. So the wave function is the same, right? It just changes the sign. Or if you get fancy, you can have anion, then you just change the phase. But the wave function is the same. The non-abelian are fundamentally different. When you exchange them, I actually create a different state. The state has changed, right? Which is kind of strange.
If I turn them back again a second time, do they come back to their original state?
No. In general, no. I don't think so. I mean, I'm not sure about that, but
then how to create the Berry phase?
Hmm?
How to create the Berry phase then?
Yeah, so let me show you an example. It will be more clear, right? So to illustrate this, and so that's why people got interested in this Marana, because Kitaev proposed that we can actually use this Marana to build as a basis for qubits. And if you have such a thing, they will be highly non-local and they are protected from local perturbation, right? Because they are topologically stable in the sense that I talked about. So how do I make a qubit? Turns out to make a qubit, I need four Maranas. Okay. So this is what I need. So let's imagine I have four Maranas. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. And now with four Maranas, I can form two fermions, right? So let me imagine that these two are coupled. And they form one fermion and form another fermion. Now this fermion can be either empty or occupied, right? So out of these four Marana, I can have two states, one where both are empty and one where both are occupied, right? Now the other one would have odd number of electrons and they are in a different sector. So if I restrict myself to the universe where I have even number of electrons, then with four Marana, I have either zero or both ones, right? So let me call both zero, my zero of my qubit, the red, and when they're both one, let me call them the one qubit. Okay. And now we do this experiment. Now, if I move this guy one and two around, nothing changes. But if I switch the position of two and three, right, then what turns out that the simple act of exchanging the position, changes the Hilbert space changes this qubit from zero to a superposition of zero and one. Okay. So it is in this sense that we have non-abelian states. Right? I created a totally different state. And now, if I switch it again, I don't know. I should know the answer, but I don't. But it will be an exercise for the students of the PSI Institute. Right? The homework problem for tonight.
You changed the norm of the state, or you're not worried about the norm?
Oh, I'm not worried about it. I didn't do it. Yeah, the norm should be here. Yeah, I shouldn't change the norm, but yeah. I didn't keep track of the norm. Right. Okay, so this is something really boggles the mind, right? I have two objects, I have two states that I write. Just changing them, I change the state. Okay, so now, of course, quantum computing is nothing but making unitary transformation on these state of qubit. So this sounds like a great idea, except for one thing: that the state that I can get to are too simple. They're too restricted. They're basically superposition of one and plus or minus one is plus or minus i. So my Hilbert space is too limited. So this is not enough to do so-called universal quantum computing. To do that, I need to be able to make a pi over 4 rotation in this case. And this setup doesn't allow us to do that. Okay, so even if I can produce a Marana fermion for you tomorrow, I can still not build a quantum computer. Okay. But for me, that's not a necessary motivation, right? Because I think these objects are sufficiently interesting in their own right. Okay. But yeah, I just want to say that so that we don't oversell these Marana fermions. Okay, so now we understand the setup. What are the candidates? How can we actually build this thing? Well, the practical problem is, of course, in nature, we don't have an example of a P plus IP superconductor that is triplet pairing. All the superconductors, the common ones that we know are all single pairs. There are a few exotic ones, but somehow they all don't quite work. Okay, but there has been a number of proposals, and these are all variants of this P plus IP idea. So the idea is that if we can create something that acts like a P plus IP superconductor, then you're in business, right? Or you have a chance of being in business. Right, so what are they? So I've classified them into two groups. One is naturally occurring. These are states that actually are there in the real world. And then there are something that we may hope to engineer. We can try to create them in the lab. Okay. Of course, there's always some problem with the natural occurring one. Well, the one that's most famous is the five half state of the fractional quantum Hall state. And this is first invented by Moore and Reed. And it's basically the following, that in the quantum Hall, fractional quantum Hall effect, we can think of in terms of composite fermions by binding fluxes to the electrons. And once you have composite fermions, you can pair them. And if you form them pair, then you can, this state that Moore and Reed is basically a P plus IP pairing of the composite fermion. Okay? So in principle, the quasi-particles excitation of these guys are, if you can localize them, are Marana fermions. Unfortunately, this state, if it exists, people are still arguing whether this state is actually the correct description of this five-half state. But even if it exists, it's very delicate. Right? It lives only at very, very low temperature, millikelvin. People have to work very hard just to observe the state. So I think people have put a lot of effort into studying the state, but I think probably quite far away from being able to demonstrate the existence of a Marana fermion. Another possibility is a helium-3 fermions, and they form pairs. The A phase turns out to have this property, but helium-3 again happens at very low temperature, and these are neutral objects. They're very hard to manipulate. We would like a charged object that we can manipulate electrically. So the third example is interesting. There's actually a naturally occurring example of triplet pairing called the strontium-ruthenate that's been studied for about 10 or 15 years now. unfortunately, this is like two copies of what I want. So you can think of it as P plus IP pairing, but there's a copy of the spin up and a copy of two spin down. So even it's bad for me, always, right? Because I always want to have one Marana. Whenever I have two, they would combine and form an electron, right? So even it's bad. So that's why this is, so if I so inside this, in this superconductor, there is a quantum vortex. Inside the vortex, there should be two of these zero modes. But two of them, of course, they interact and then they will split. So I lose my Marana. Now, it was predicted some years ago that if you can make a HC over 4E vortex, that's half of a conventional vortex, okay, which you can stabilize because you have some internal degrees of freedom. It's a complicated thing. Then you have a single zero mode. And recently, Illinois, Budakian, actually succeeded in stabilizing this HC over 4E vortex. Okay, so that's why I say that, in principle, somewhere in Illinois, lifts this Marana particle right now. The question is, how do you know that you have it there? Okay, and the problem is the following. Inside a vortex, there are a lot of these, what we call the Karoly degen state. There are many, many states in the gap. Because inside a vortex is essentially a normal region. So there are a lot of finite density states. So there are many, many fermion states with very, very small separation between the level. In fact, the level spacing is the gap squared divided by the Fermi energy. So tiny, tiny. So this poor Marana is sitting there, even if it's sitting there at zero energy. It's within, you know, micro Kelvin. There will be another level there. So it will be very hard to see it. Okay. Well, it will be impossible to see it. Okay. And I'll talk with you about the detection scheme later. Okay. So this doesn't work either. So that got people to think, you know, can we create our own P plus IP superconductor, right? And the first suggestion is a brilliant one from Liang Fu, who's now my colleague at MIT, and Charlie Kane. And the idea is to start from this, again, a very fascinating object, the topological insulator was discovered 5 or 6 years ago. It turns out that on top of these insulators, it's predicted that the surface of lifts the surface stage, which are like a Dirac spectrum. Right, so these objects lifts on the surface of a insulator, a bulk insulator. Okay, and but the magical thing, you say that okay, by now you know we know that Dirac spectrums are everywhere. In graphene, for example, we have Dirac spectrum. So what's the big deal about this? Well, graphene has four of these Dirac cones because they're spin up and down. And then there are the two orbital labels. Okay, four is bad, because four is even number. Okay, but the magical thing about this topological insulator is that there's a single one of this Dirac cone on the surface. There's actually a theorem in high energy physics that says that these things have to come in pairs. You ask yourself, where's the other pair? Well, it turns out the other pair is on the bottom. Right? So you manage to spatially separate the two Dirac cones, one on the top surface, one on the bottom surface. And so this is actually what happens. And people have done experiments and seen these surface state and exhibiting this spectrum. So these are real objects. So their proposal, Fu and Kang, is to simply put this on top, put a superconductor on top of this insulator, topological insulator. And by a well-known thing called proximity effect, we can induce pairing into this Dirac cone, right? And it turns out, I'll explain to you in the next slide, the pairing that you induce is precisely this P plus IP pairing that we need. Right? So this is a very clever path, okay? I still think this is probably the most promising path, but right now there's a lot of, many people are trying to do this, obviously, all over the world. But right now, this is a relatively new field, so people don't have too much experience working with these topological insulators. And so you need some time to develop the material science to control them and understand how to make proximity coupling and so on. So, but I think progress will be made in this direction. The other direction is to do something different, is to use conventional material, more conventional material. and use something called Rajpah splitting to achieve the same phenomenon. So I'll try to explain both of these to you. So the Fu and Kang scheme, as I said, relies on having a single of these direct cone. So on the surface, they would, if the Fermi surface happened to be here, the direct cone would be a circle. Okay. Now, because of the strong spin orbit coupling that exists in this topological insulator, this electron spin is actually tied to the momentum. So in other words, a particle is traveling this way, the spin is going this way, right? So that's a helicity. Well, I guess in neutrino, you're used to the fact that if neutrino going this way, the spin is along the direction of propagation. So we just turn it sideways, okay? So in this material, the spins are perpendicular to it. So as you go around the Fermi surface, the spin actually winds around. Okay, so that turns out to be a crucial property because so the idea is that on top of this, you put a superconductor, and that superconductor would induce a pairing between the electron states of this surface state. But if instead of writing in terms of electron state, you write it in terms of the eigenstates of this Fermi surface. So So what is the eigenstate of this system? Well, at each direction, the spin is pointing in some odd direction, right? So the eigenstate should be a superposition of the momentum, which with upspin, downspin, but has a phase angle, right? And this angle should change, would wind around as I go around this circle, right? So this is the eigenstate of this guy, the wave function, the relative phase between the. So this is like my U's This is the relative phase between the up and down spin has this winding as I go around. Okay, because remember this phase controls the whether the spin is up or down. Okay, but now if you induce a pairing in the original spin basis, right, with the up and down spin, then you can easily see that it induces pairing between these two guys, then that pairing picks up this winding, okay? Because this spin, this object is a superposition of the two spin with exactly this phase, okay? But this is exactly what you need because the superconducting order parameter now changes this phase by 2 pi as I go around the Fermi surface, and that's the signal of a P plus IP superconductor. The P plus IP superconductor is one where the pairing changes this phase by winding. Okay, so this is how they propose to create out of conventional superconductor by using this clever surface state to make a P plus IP superconductor. And once you have that, then you're kind of home free.
Does it also imply that if the surface on its own becomes superconducting?
I'm sorry?
If the surface
on its own.
On its own. Will it be a P plus IP or?
Then it depends on the mechanism.
Okay.
Why this is superconducting. Yeah, if it's conventional phonon, yes. But we don't know of an example of that, so it's probably easier to induce it. Okay. So we see that the ingredient we need to engineer this P plus IP is that we need a superconductor first. But we have plenty of those. We know plenty of us as we've seen. And we need this kind of helical spin band, something where the spin winds around the Fermi surface, right, to induce this, so that we can convert this S wave to P wave. Right? That's the ingredient, this spin winding around. That's what we need. Okay, so that gives rise to the second route, which does not rely on this topological insulator, and uses instead something called the Rajpah coupling, superconductor, and T-breaking. So these are the three ingredients that we need. Okay, but these are all available in the lab. We know examples of all these properties. It was first suggested in a paper by Fujimoto, who suggested some non-central symmetric superconductor. A couple of years later, a group of Dasama and all at Maryland suggested using a semiconductor to realize this, and this has gotten a lot of attention. At the same time, I made some proposal that's similar to the original Fujimoto one. I didn't know this paper existed. And then there's a lot of further development. So this is a path that currently being pursued very rigorously by many people. So let me try to explain how this works. Yeah, so what is this? What is the Rajpa coupling? So it's this form of spin-orbit interaction. So it happens in a two-dimensional electron gas. When you have a two-dimensional electron gas, then on the surface, of course, you break inversion symmetry. So we can think of this on the surface as if there's a large electric field, right? If you have an electric field, then that can induce a spin-orbit coupling, right? And the spin-orbit coupling would be of the form, like this. So we can have a coupling which couples the spin, this is a Pauli matrix, and the magnetic field. Z is in the perpendicular to the space. So this is in the XY plane, right? So this would have a property of trying to lock the spin in the direction perpendicular to the momentum, right? Sigma cross, okay. So that's exactly what we want. We want to lock the spin perpendicular to the momentum. Okay. So that would do it. So if you have a conventional parabolic band, if you turn on this Rajpa coupling, what happens? What happens is that you split the band, right, in this way. You split it this way. So now spin is no longer a good quantum number, right? In the usuals, and in fact, if my Fermi surface were here, if I cut it here, then I can see that it crosses this thing twice. So I have two circles, right? And the circles are such that the outside one, the spin is locked. In both circles, the spins are locked to the direction of propagation, but they lock in the opposite direction. Right? One is winding this way, the other is winding that way. So again, I have two. I end up with two of these guys. So now if I can induce superconductor, I would have a P plus IP and a P plus P minus IP. So two is bad, right? Because when I have two of these, if I can make Marana, I make two Maranas, and then two of them disappear. So I have to find a way of getting rid of one of them. Okay, so in my original thought was to apply a big field to split these things, but these guys actually have a better idea.
So what are the green arrows then?
The green arrows. That's a good question. I think forget about the green arrows. Oh no, it's I guess there's a label. It's the quantization axis. So it's supposed to describe a meandering, a rotating quantization axis. But forget about it. I should remove it. I stole this from somebody else, of course. Yeah, so the idea, a clever idea, is that now if you apply a time reversal symmetry field, for example, a magnetic field in the Z direction, then you can open this crossing. Right? This crossing is open. Okay? And now if you can arrange for your Fermi surface to be here, right, then you would have a single band. So this is very clever. So out of the two bands, I have one. And when I have one, I'm in business, right? So this, if I can now make this guy a superconductor, so now I have one. Chemical potential is here. And now I put on a pairing term by some proximity induced superconductor that will open a gap here, right? So this state is precisely the P plus IP state I want, right? So now this is a way of engineering a P plus IP state. And then we can ask, how do we make a fermion? Now we can make a Marana. So the original idea was that we'd make a vortex, right? And then the Marana would sit inside the vortex. Okay. Now there are problems with this. First of all, you know, controlling the motion of vortices are not so easy. And second of all, there's this mini gap issue that I already mentioned. Because inside a vortex core, there are many, many low-lying states. So this Marana will be separated from the other fermions only by a tiny amount. And it will be almost impossible to isolate it thermally. Okay, so you need another idea. So the other idea is to use a one-dimensional, make a long wire, right? And it turns out that many years ago, again, Kitaev pointed out that if you have a one-dimensional wire of a P superconductor, at the end of the wire, you would find its Marana particles. Okay, so anyway, I don't need to go through the details. But so that's what he found. If you have a strictly one-dimensional wire, you have Marana particles. And then that has inspired people to now really go to town to design things so that you can move this. So the idea is that if you have a wire, of a few superconductors. Then the Marano fermion lives at the end. So these people made designs of how to move these guys around by putting gates and so on and so forth. And how to exchange them. You can braid them by making, if you can build a T-junction, what they call a T-junction, it's like a railroad track with a side track. Right? You can put your Marano here, store it there for a little while, put this guy back. Now this is the way of exchanging them, right? So you can let your imagination run and can carry all these Gedanken experiments. Of course, the real experimentalists are not that happy about this. So the discussion up to that point was based on strictly one-dimensional wires. Of course, nature, we don't know how to make one-dimensional wires, right? And so that got us thinking, and this is our first work on this with a student, Andrew Potter, several years ago. We asked ourselves, you know, can we still have this? What happens if I cannot have a one-dimensional wire, but I have a finite width, which I can make in the lab. I can make a strip, right? It can be 1,000 angstrom wide, it can be a few hundred angstrom wide. What happens then? The question is that we know that if you have a square piece of this P plus IP superconductor, there are so-called edge states that runs around an edge, right? That runs, their chiral edge state that runs around. What happens if I make them long and narrow? Well, in this, if I start with a square and progressively make it thinner and thinner. What we found is that what happens is that this chiral edge state actually turns into Marano end states. Okay? So actually, we don't need to have a strictly one-dimensional wire. All you have to do is for a relatively narrow wire, and the Marano will show up. Okay? Now, you don't get something for free. Okay? And it turns out what happens is the following. In a finite wire, then from quantum mechanics, you know that you have to quantize and the transverse direction. And then you make this subband, quantum subband, right? And this is well-known basic quantum mechanics, and people realize this in the lab. And what happens is that if you now increase your chemical potential as you go up the subband, at the bottom of the subband is when I first illustrated this before, when this spin-orbit coupling thing split and so on and so forth. But it turns out that this Marano effect is, again, an even odd number of effects. All that I need is for an even number, when an odd number of these levels are occupied, then I have Marano. The red states signify that I have a zero energy mode. This is numerical coming out of a computer. And at some point, I cross to the next subband. When that cross, then this zero mode move up. Actually, what happens is that a gap close, which you need for any topological phase transition, the bulk gap closes. Actually, another Marano comes down and form produce a physical fermion, which then move away. So now this becomes gapped. But after a while, if I go to the next band, then the gap closes again. And that turns out to bring down another Marano fermion, which stays at zero energy. And this guy keeps it going. So what happens is that as I fill the band, all I do is that I create more and more of these low-lying fermion states. But I still have these Marano states, depending on whether I have an even and odd number of bands filled. Okay, so that's very good, because that means that I don't need to manufacture a strictly one-dimensional wire. I just take any old wire, and I just have to be able to adjust my chemical potential so that I can go from this even and odd subband filling, which is quite feasible. Okay. So the physical reason for this is the following. You see, if I have a big wide wire, I know that I have these edge states that are running around on the edge. If my wires get narrower and narrower, then the edge mode on the top and the edge mode on the bottom start talking to each other and gap itself out. So now, originally they are gapless, zero energy states, but now they become gapped. So in this mechanism, the bulk is fully gapped, and this poor Marano gets left on the end, one on each side. Okay. So this is what we're looking for. Right? We can have a situation where I have a long wire and the Maranas are left on the end. And turns out that you start worrying, do I need to have very perfect wire so that I have this particle in a box story? Turns out that it's not necessary. You don't need transverse quantization. We may study where the wires look like this, where you have the edges are wriggling like that. Obviously, you don't have any transverse mode anymore, but still, the even and odd Marana survives. And we can have meandering wires like this, and you can see this Marana survive. So these are topological objects that they are very forgiving. Right? That's the good news. So once you have them, they will survive. Okay. So this is a concrete proposal made by the Salmons group and also a group by Oreck and so on. So the idea is the following. You take a conventional superconductor, I mean niobium or something. You put what is called a nanowire, a semiconductor nanowire, and what they use is people know how to make these wire. The size dimension is like 1,000 angstrom wire. They're not that small, actually. That the 1,000 angstrom is like a 500 atoms by 500 atoms. Right? So there are millions of atoms in here. And because of the Rajpa effect, you have some Rajpa splitting of the band, and you apply magnetic field parallel to the wire to give you the splitting that I need, break time reversal. So in principle, quite simple. The advantage is that we know people with years of experience know how to make very clean nanowires. The disadvantage for this semiconductor system is that the Rajpa energy, which is actually the fundamental energy in the problem, is very, very small. It's about half a Kelvin. So you have to work in millikelvin to hope to see anything. And it's also not scalable because you can't control how you make these nanowires. What people do is that they just drop them randomly on the surface because you cannot make a circuit out of it, right? Okay. So we had another idea. Our idea was to use a surface state instead of semiconductors. It's well known that in certain metals, on certain surfaces, there are surface states. And these surface states in something like gold is split by Rajpa. So this is actually experimental data, photoemission data, showing this surface state. This is a dispersion of surface state. And this is split exactly the way I drew it before, right? You can imagine it's like this. And the splitting is 10 millivolts, which is 200 times bigger than the semiconductor wire that I talked about before. So the energy scale is now 200 times bigger. And so the proposal is very simple. We can evaporate this gold 111 surface, and you can make something about 1,000 angstrom wide, maybe 10 microns long. Apply magnetic field power to the plane, and then you're in business. You should have Marana sitting at the end. Right? In principle, the simplest experiment you can think of. Okay. And again, the other thing we found is that turns out that these Maranas are very robust. You can have many, many filled bands. And it's still the red or the Marana regions. You have this even and odd effect and so on and so forth. So I think this is quite promising. And in fact, I'm talking to some experimentalists at MIT who are trying this right now. But it is all work in progress.
Question?
Yeah.
So at the end, you have one Marana mode.
Yeah.
At the tip, spread over a large area now.
Yeah. They will live at the end, right? The wave function will be spread.
It will be spread.
Over the cross section, and it will be spread inside, but the scale will be given by the superconducting coherence length, which is typically several thousand angstrom.
But the gap to the next level, how that also will be correspondingly small.
Yeah, so that's the question I'll come to. Turns out typically it will be a fraction of the superconducting gap. Okay, so it's a much better situation than the subband in the vortex core. Okay, so you can gain this way. Okay. Now, to compare this original Fu and Kane scheme, their scheme doesn't break time reversal symmetry and therefore is actually insensitive to disorder. But all these schemes are very sensitive to disorder. And because of the small energy scale, I'm not optimistic that the semiconductor route is a good one. Right? That's why we want to propose this. How to detect them, right? So now I have this wire, and supposedly Maranas are sitting there. How do I know that they're there? Well, the simplest first experiment would be a tunneling experiment, okay? So you take an STM or something, you tunnel. You might think that, well, this state is not an electron state. How can I tunnel in this state that is its own antiparticle? Right? That's not possible, right? But it turns out that you can. And the process is actually an Andreyev reflection. So let me first give you the answer. So it turns out that this Marana has a very unique signature, if you have it. If you can tunnel into it, we predict that there is a peak. Obviously, because you have a state. So in tunneling spectrum, you measure the voltage, right? He's a superconducting gap, ideally, right? So in principle, I would see a state, right? Because I have a zero energy mode, right? When I tunnel, I should see a state. So that's nothing special. But the prediction is special is that the height of this state is given by this universal number conducting, 2e squared over h. The height is always constant. No matter how far away your tip is, the distance to the tip only affects the width of this peak, not the height. So this is very peculiar and it's very unique. So we think this is a unique signature of Mariana. It relies on the fact that these are exact superposition of two amplitudes are exactly equal. Right? Remember U and V. If they're exactly equal, then I have this. Why is that? Well, let me remind you, tell you that for the students, that there's a well-known phenomenon called resonant tunneling, or even in textbooks, you should probably. If you have a tunnel barrier, if you tunnel through some resonant state in the barrier, then then you can have so-called resonant tunneling. The height of this resonant tunneling depends on the relative amplitude to the right and to the left, right? So I can tunnel to the right and to the left. And if they happen to be exactly equal, then I have a maximum in this resonant tunneling, and that height is exactly e squared over h. Right? That's well known. Well, what happens here is that I have a single lead. Now, I cannot really tunnel an electron into this, but what happens is that the electron comes in, it turns into a pair because it is a superconductor, and becomes a hole and comes back out. Right? This is called Andreev reflection. And now you can see that these two are exactly analogous, except that the electrons coming in and the hole going out are using exactly the same lead. I actually have one lead. This is a misleading picture. And therefore, I'm guaranteed that T1 is always equal to T2, that the two leads are the same. And this is the origin of this. Okay, so I think this is a rather robust signature of this wire. Now, unfortunately, when you go to finite temperature, of course, then this is flawed. And you can have this thing only if temperature is smaller than the width of this level. Now finally I can get to the experiment. So at the large March meeting last year, Delgroof announced that they have actually carried out this experiment proposed by the using the semiconductor wire. It's a marvel in technology. So this is the nanowire. Yeah. So the scale is that this is 1 micron. So the length of the wire is about 2 micron. The width of the wire is about 1,000 angstrom. And they put superconductor on top of this. And they have gates underneath to control the electrostatic and so on. Now over here, they build a tunnel barrier. So they actually can tunnel right at the end of this thing. Right? So this consider this to be the end of the wire, and they can tunnel into it. Right? So they're actually carrying exactly the experiment is designed. So the claim is that now, you see, this is a tunneling spectrum. Right? So there's a superconducting gap like this. And then now they claim that as they turn up the magnetic field, you need external field to open this gap to make one moron. That this there's a zero mode that shows up and persists over some field and then disappear. Okay, so that's the evidence. And as a function of temperature, this peak gets taller and taller and stops. Okay. Now notice a few things. One is that the height of this peak, they plot the height in units of this 2e squared over h in anticipation of seeing 1, what is true Mariana. But the height is only a tenth of it or so, right? Even at the lowest temperature, this is even half. It's 5%, right? Less than 5% of what you expect to see, what you want to see. Yeah. It could be that the temperature is still not low enough. But I think the more serious problem is that you can see that this whole thing, the zero is not here. The zero is here. At this point when the zero is here. Right. So there's a lot of, this is not gapped. This system is not gapped. Right. There's a lot of states inside the gap. Right. And that is in some sense deadly, right? Because that means that you have not even achieved, the first thing that you need is to create a gap system to protect your Mariana. The origin of the states in the gaps are not known. So that's why I have some issues about this experiment. So finite energy is background tunneling. And we know from our simulation also that if you have, in the pristine case, you expect this even odd effect. But if you have a disordered case, if you have a lot of disorder, this thing actually gets filled in with many states. So the question is it possible that they have enough disorder which induces states in the gap, which kind of mimics these zero energy states that they see? Okay, so those are the open questions. Now, there are more sophisticated experiments down the road. If you think you have Marana to detect parity, and those so-called 4-pi Josephson effect. Well, I probably don't have time to go into that now, so let me just skip that. But again, let me just say that these mini-gap states are very detrimental to this, because once you have mini-gap states, this effect will be killed. Okay. So, sorry, I got a little over time, but let me conclude. I think Marana instances are surprisingly robust, and I think they are more advantageous than looking for vortex states in the vortex. The requirement for the sample is not that stringent. The width has to be smaller than the supernatant coherence states, which is typically thousands of angstroms. So in the lab, we can easily create these objects. And I think the original Fu and King scheme probably still has some advantage. And I'm a proponent of using the surface state to take advantage of a larger energy scale. So I think this field is attracting a lot of attention from the experimentalists now, and so I'm hopeful that maybe Marana bound state we will be able to see it not too far in the future. Thank you.
Question?
But if you look at the end of the wire, if there is a reduction in order parameter for some reason, the pairing strength may be small there, then that will make it close to normal state.
Yeah.
And there may be a lot of
gapless exchange. Yeah, that's also bad for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't want the supernatant gap to close.
So you want to hold it all the way.
Yeah, but that's okay. I think there's no reason why.
Because you said the sizes of the order of 1,000.
Coherent state, yeah, they're big. In a particular space.
What about some spontaneous vertices getting stuck there? I mean, there may be when the dimension becomes smaller.
No, I think it's the opposite. Vortices would want to move. Well, first of all, you would not put a magnetic field this way. Right, the magnetic field is in parallel to the plane, so you don't want to make vortices. Yeah.
Question? How soft performance in top-notch generate intrinsic.
Oh, you mean whether you can have intrinsic superconductivity in superconductor? Well, first of all, you know, these guys are supposed to be bulk insulators, right? They're insulating
on the
bulk.
Surface.
On the surface state, whether you can have. Actually, I think it's much better to induce the superconductor than to try to make them spontaneously. Part of the reason that I talk about. For example, you know, one dimensional wire is actually not stable. The superconductor is not stable, right? Because of phase fluctuation. But if you induce it, then it will be stable. Okay, so you're better off inducing it rather than relying on nature to give you ordinary supernatant. And you want a quite large supernatant gap, so I think it's probably not that hopeful on the surface state for them to spontaneously give you a supernatant.
What are the near-term prospects for smaller particles?
I'm sorry?
What are the near-term prospects for smaller cross-section nanowires?
Make it smaller?
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in this field, but they seem to be stuck on a few hundred angstrom. Mm. Yeah. You can make them smaller, but then they get very disordered. Right? The good thing about these nanowires is it's very, very clean. The mean free path is several diameters. The mean free path, the electron don't get scattered until they get several diameters. And also, I think because of this, they probably are dealing with many subbands, actually. So it's probably not a big advantage to make them smaller.
That was the next question.
Yeah, I think that probably doesn't pay. My feeling is that this Rajpa energy scale is a key. If you can find a way of making a bigger Rajpa scale on this semiconductor wire, then you can win. But yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think this first experiment is very beautiful and, you know, amazing that they got so far. But it's probably too early to claim victory. They've seen something there. It's very interesting.
These Majorana fermions, are they interesting from the quantum computational point of view?
Well, that was this, people always talk about building a computer out of it, right? But as I said, they're not enough. You cannot build a quantum computer out of it.
Patrick, what about the experimental effort to the next level of non-abelian, like Fibonacci and AI?
I don't know of any proposal for realization of it. There's some people talking about, you probably know more than I do, there's some even more exotic fractional quantum Hall states that are supposed to do this.
But there are no...
But there's no solid state analog that I've heard of. Yeah, that would be interesting to think about.
Okay, so if there's no further question, so I would encourage all of you to come to talk tomorrow at 4:00 here. And also there is a snack in the bistro if you talk with Patrick Moore, please come. So let's thank Patrick again.